Hey guys, Barney here with a little update. I want to give a quick thanks to AB Universe for sponsoring The Big Top. Taking over production responsibilities has been a huge undertaking, and I'm extremely grateful to have such a fantastic sponsor, whose products I have used for years and can personally vouch for. You can now use my promo code BIGTOP to get 10% off your order at abuniverse.com. That's abuniverse.com. Thanks again to ABU for sponsoring this podcast. They're all is aching. And welcome to The Big Top. I am your host, Barney, and today I am joined by Andromeda Circus, a drag artist, aerial performer, and gymnast lighting up the fetish scene with outstanding performances that are really jaw-dropping. I saw Andromeda perform at Fetish Week last year and had to get this person on the pod one way or another. Apologies for my croaky voice in this episode. I edited out all the coughing, but I am just hanging on for dear life. We recorded this while I was sick last week, and immediately after this recording, I lay in bed sweating for the rest of the day and then week. Feeling better now, not 100%, but this really took it out of me. Today's story time comes from Pup Yeah Yeah, who writes... Hi, Barney. First off, I love your podcast. You always sound so natural on the mic, and you do a great job of exploring diverse topics in each episode. Oh, thank you so much. Now for a kinky story. When I was in college, I found a website blog where people would write in their crazy masturbation stories. Was this Experience Project? I feel like this is Experience Project. I was on Experience Project. That's a story for another time. Anyway, crazy masturbation stories. Most of the stories centered around unique ways people jerked off. Things like... Fill a Ziploc bag with lotion, stick it in between two mattresses and hump away. Whoa. Or carve a hole into a grapefruit, heat it up in the microwave and hump away. Okay, these are cool. One story, however, caught my eye. A guy mentioned how at night when everyone was asleep, he would take off all his clothes, climb out the bedroom window and walk through the woods. Okay. He talked about how much this excited him and how he liked to jerk off while doing it. I, of course, had to try this. Lucky for me, I lived in the country. Well, semi-country. Our closest neighbors were about 50 yards or 46 meters away. You could see their houses through the woods. Unfortunately, I still lived at home with my parents, but that kind of added to the excitement. So anyway, one night, after waiting for my parents to go to sleep, I decided to go for it. I opened my window, took off all my clothes, peeked out to make sure no one was around, and then crawled out. It was instantly exhilarating. I was scared to go too far away from the window at first. What would happen if someone saw me? What if my parents woke up? Also, yeah, so many questions. So you got naked and then jumped out the window. I feel like I would do it the other way. I would go, does it have to be out the window? Anyway, eventually I calmed down and started walking a bit further. My window was on the backside of the house, so I had a bit of shelter from the neighbors across the street. There was a bright streetlight that would spotlight me if I stepped into it, which I briefly did. I decided to walk to the edge of the woods. You're wearing shoes, right? I have so many questions. shut up and read it. I bet he's going to answer all these questions. Then I decided to walk to the edge of the woods, just up a small hill about 40 feet away. I was barefoot, so I wasn't about to walk into the woods. But I stood at the edge for a while. My boner was at full attention with this level of excitement, so I figured I would go ahead and do what I came out there for. Whoa. It was strange, though. The night was incredibly beautiful. There was a full moon and clear skies. The stars were brighter than ever. As I was jerking off, I wasn't thinking about sex or body parts. I was thinking about life and nature. I stared up at the night sky and thought, I'm part of this. I'm part of this whole universe. And I'm doing what I was created to do. Whoa. Wow. I didn't feel perverse. I felt like a creature of the world and its natural habitat doing something that was completely natural. As I came, well, You're not going to believe this, but I swear it's true. As I came, a shooting star shot across the night sky. And like, wow. What are the odds of that? How can you ever try to recreate that? How many people living or dead have experienced that? Am I the only person to ever come at the exact same time they see a shooting star? Probably not. That would be silly. But damn, it is cool. It took me a minute to recover from that. I shook off the rest of my cum, left my seed on the ground, and went back to my bedroom window. I looked at the stars one more time before crawling in. I still enjoy getting naked or having sex in nature whenever I can. I don't really think of myself as an exhibitionist. I just like being one with nature. Wow. That is fucking awesome and so cool. And I love those vibes. Like, I really gel with this idea of... I think a lot of the time we think about kink is something that's like perverse or you know, socially unacceptable or depraved or whatever, and I love this reframing of no, this is totally natural. I'm just a creature of the universe. Okay, the shooting star thing, that is really cool. I don't know how many people know this, but shooting stars are actually really, really common, and we just normally can't see them. And so I don't know where in the world this is, but clearly somewhere where you get to see them sometimes. I have seen shooting stars, I think a couple times in my life, but there was one that was like the most insane experience. I once, you can do this like tour where you go up Mount Sinai. You do it, I think you leave at like 4 or 5. And then by the time you get to the top of the mountain, the sun rises and like it's absolutely incredible. But you're going up in pitch black, which means, you know, you're in the middle of the desert. You can literally just see the whole night sky. It's just stars. And I remember seeing the first shooting star and being like floored, wowed, like this is unbelievable. And then there was another and then another. And then I think there was like 7 in the, like, you know. And I was like, this is crazy. This is like, how, like what? And the people there were like, no, actually, when you can see the night sky well enough, you can normally see a lot of them because there's always, you know, crap flying through the sky. But I didn't know that. I thought shooting stars were like super, super rare. I didn't realize that they're just rare to see. So I do, I like totally believe you. And that is so fucking cool though, the timing, like, wow. I wonder if you are one of the few people who have come the moment they see a shooting star. That's fucking dope. Thanks for sending that in. That was like amazing. And what a beautiful story. I love that. Also that it's like, it's kinky, but it's kinky in such a like base primal natural way. And that it's, you know, I love any kink that you can do on your own. And that's also not thinking about anything except like, I'm just doing this thing that I was born to do out in nature. That's so fucking cool. Do please keep sending these kinky stories to thebigtop.pod@gmail.com. That's thebigtop.pod@gmail.com. They are all amazing and fantastic, and I love getting to read them. You can also send them in and just say that you don't want it read on the podcast, because that's absolutely fine as well. Also, send in questions as well. If there's something you want to ask me and are just burning to know, I'll answer your questions in the next week's episode. As always, please rate and review the podcast if you get the opportunity. And without further ado, today the circus returns to London, England, and I invite you to join me as we go under the Big Top. Hey, welcome to the Big Top. Finally got
you.
Well, I really, really was considering cancelling, because I'm sure everyone at home can hear just how sick I am. But I was like, I'm not delaying us a third time. But yeah, hey. I really, really, really wanted to get you on the pod, because the time that we met, I was like so in awe of your performance at Fetish Week. And I was like, who is this person?
Stop me.
No, I won't. hang on. So let's start at the beginning. How did you even enter the world of kink and fetish?
Well, I guess it's all been an evolution. I started doing, maybe this is the origin, I started doing lip singing when I was a kid. I was doing some shows lip singing, and then I really like the performing of it. So I became a ballet dancer, and then I started doing gymnastics, and you're always looking for something a little bit harder to do, something challenging. And then I did circus, and then blah, blah, blah. And then I moved to London. I discovered the fetish scene, and I thought like it was very liberating somehow. And there was a lot of things hiding somehow on me that could be like an art expression, because for me the fetish is, well, we all have like a fetish size when we're having sex, but if for the scene it can be like very artistic as well. It's always a way to twist things and making it arty. I guess that could happen in the bed as well.
Yeah, totally.
So,
I dress as a clown to have sex. So, like, yeah, I'm totally all about the, like, performativity of
kids. Yeah. So, I guess that was it. I was kind of, like, I was impressed. I mean, when you come from somewhere like Gran Canaria, like me, where the carnival is, like, something, like, very big and the outfits are insane and anything related to getting to a character is kind of, like, you think you have seen it because it's very big there. But then you move to London and you see that side that I haven't seen anywhere else in the world, and I've been traveling a lot, which is like all this latex movement and leather. And then you see like you have some more to explore, and that moves you to a different way of creation somehow.
I mean, you say those carnival outfits are insane. Your outfits are insane. They're amazing. I think you had prosthetics on, didn't you?
Yeah, most of the time I like to wear prosthetics. I like to, I don't know, the last thing I created was this Phoenix, which is UV, and I use UV makeup. And I tried to go one step farther somehow with the creations, just because I like to twist things and making them different. So, but yeah, I guess because I mix what I have learned in the past from my history in the islands, in the carnival, with what I see here now, you know, like it's so interesting because now I look back they still do like the big drag queen contest there, and I feel like the outfits are amazing, but I feel like I have evolved in a different direction and I wouldn't take that path again. So I guess it's the own path of everyone in everything, in the creation or in your personal life or whatever it is.
Do you make all of your own costumes?
I make most of it. Like, wow. It's interesting. Like, before the Phoenix, I created the alien look. And even though the designer, she's very well known and I really like her, she's my friend, the way it was put together, it wasn't really what I wanted, what I have in my head. So then I was needing to learn latex. So I undid it and I put it together again, the way that I wanted. So yeah, I also learned to do latex to be able to create it by myself. I kind of like, maybe I struggled to, it's a name for that when you are the boss and you, I can't delegate. I have to do it myself. somehow I get this creativity from, I don't know, from the source, and it's so hard to transfer that to someone else because you have it in your head. Even sometimes you can draw it, but it's not exactly the same of what is in your head somehow. So yeah, I kind of like to make most of my stuff myself. Even the prosthetics, most of them I also make them myself. Or sometimes it's like a big, big research behind to find exactly the thing that I wanted.
That's so cool. I'm like, I wish, you know what? It's like in my head, I feel like I have a lot of creativity and then I just can't be bothered to actually do anything about it.
Really?
Yeah. I'm a lazy person.
I don't think I can do like you know, I was doing beauty retail before, and that was okay because you always deal with different customers. So it's kind of creative. But I couldn't do like a job that is 9 till 5 and it's always the same.
Yeah. No, me neither.
So I'm kind of very happy that I'm in a very creative scene.
Did you... Okay, so actually, when I first met you and saw you, you were hanging from your mouth, and I was like, oh, okay. And I want to ask you, so when you did... This is at Fetish Week at Steelworks. You did a hoop performance, and like... I was, my jaw was on the floor because you were doing like a split in a hoop and then you were like fisting yourself. And I was like, incredible, amazing. I noticed that a massive dildo fell down off the stage and I went and brought it back to you. Was that, what happened and what, where was that supposed to go and what was supposed to happen? Because that thing was fucking huge.
Well, the thing is like, you have like, certain time, or you should have like a certain time, you know, before you go on a stage, and then you plan how long you can have that thing inside you, right? And then they told me, now you go next, and I felt like, okay, cool, so I get ready. So obviously, like, you do all the preparation before, and you put the thing inside, and you have like maybe 5 minutes before you act, let's say like in total 10 minutes. So before of me was in a speech for about 15 minutes. And the dildo meant to come outside like halfway through my act, which is like after a minute and a half. But it was inside for so long that it just like went off. As soon as I got on the hoop, it went out of my body. So people, but I get it, like people don't realize what it is. Because if you don't do that kind of shows, you don't really know like what's happening in your body. But it needs to be like really well planned, especially when you do something like that, because you cannot hold things like, I mean, especially as you said, like, it was big, it's very big. A little one, okay. But if it's something big, you need to listen to your body and doing it with your body. And obviously they were expecting more from my body, and I also was asking my body to do more that it could do. And then it didn't come out in the moment that was needing to come out. So yes, blow away. I'm glad you saw it flying, because I guess like many people didn't even see it. Yeah. It meant to be part of the act, so I guess improvised in that part.
Well, but hey, I mean, most people are just staring, like, oh my god, you know, like. Okay, so you mentioned coming from Gran Canaria. Were you involved in like the scene there? Do you know what the fetish scene is like there?
I kind of know more or less what the scene is there, but because I'm from there and I always wanted to be very respectful, especially to my parents, and I don't think it will be something they will approve. So I try, even though at the beginning I used to go there and perform or do some makeup or do something for people, but I never did anything related to the fetish scene.
Sure, yeah.
I also didn't want to be in the position, oh, why are you performing today? And because also my mom was a very she used to be a very good fan of me, so she wanted to come to all my shows. She used to come to all my shows. So I cannot really, I didn't want to be in a situation telling her, like, you can't come to this one, because then I will need to explain her everything.
Yeah.
So I wanted to keep it very respectful for them. But now, well, my dad is very ill and my mom passed away last year. So, I guess like maybe at some point I will break it there as well. I don't know. But that has been the situation. I haven't really performed any of the fetish act in Gran Canaria at all.
I mean, it's so lovely to hear how supportive your mum was. I was talking to someone the other day because there's Pup Neon, who I had on this podcast, who told me like the bravest story ever, where he just sat his parents down and told them everything. He was like, look, some pictures are going to come out of me. This is all the stuff I'm into. And they were so supportive. And I think a lot of us just, I mean, I'm the same. Like, I could not imagine bringing that up with my parents. But I think it's so cool when, you know, we all treat this differently and we all have different relationships with our parents and whatever. But like, I think it is really, really cool when somebody's able to be open to that point. And obviously, there's a lot of people who would say like, yeah, well, there's a lot of things that just aren't their business, or they just wouldn't want to know. Like, yeah, that's totally fair enough. But I think it's so cool when people have parents that are like incredibly supportive, even to like talking about like some of this fetish stuff, which to me is like, ugh, I don't want to talk to my mom about this, but like, yeah.
Well, my parents were very supportive with all my performing life. Also, being gay at the time was like a big thing for them. I guess it could be like a big thing for them, but they both were very supportive with that as well. And I think I'm very lucky for the parents I have. Yeah, and I think it's very sad that some people, they don't get the same support from the loved ones, because I think that's one of the things that we want the most, to be accepted and supported by the people we love. Because the one we don't love, who cares? But those ones who love you are the ones who really play a role in your life, and you want them to accept you for who you are, because we accept them for how they are.
Yeah. I mean, the beauty of being queer is also that, like, even when, you know, somebody is, let's say, kicked out of their home, or their parents don't talk to them or whatever, at the very least, we then get to choose, you know, the family that we build in our community. And I think that's it's so wonderful when people have supportive parents. And also, like, more and more people that I talk to, that is being the case, which is a good sign, because it means that times are changing. So what was your coming out experience like then?
I don't know. I don't think it was my mom. I mean, I went on holidays with my boyfriend. I introduced it to my parents, like my friend. And one day my mom saw that was something else. And obviously it was. And then I told her. She didn't take it. It's not like she was, I mean, she didn't know how to take it, because she didn't know. She didn't have the experience in the family or anything. But my dad was kind of very natural about it, because one of my cousins, she's now a transgender.
Oh, wow.
So for my dad, was more normal, I guess. It was the son of his brother, the one who have more relationship with him. So I guess he lived from very close. He knew what was going on and how his brother was feeling about it. You know, I guess he put in the position, but my mother didn't have that experience somehow. So for her, it was probably a little bit more dramatic, but it was more like she didn't understand if I was gonna be transgender, or if it was gonna become a woman, or if I was gonna get involved into drugs, for example. She wasn't aware. For her, it was like a totally different world that she was scared about.
Wow.
But then everything went fine, and again, she was very supportive. She was also more worried about, like, I guess, what people was gonna say, because I'm from a very small villa.
Yeah.
But then soon after, I did the Las Palmas de Gran Canaria drag queen contest, and I won. And I guess, you know, we say in Spain, like, if you are nobody, you are queer. But if you are somebody, if you have money, or if you win something, or if you are, you know, you have a name, then you are Mr. Gay. You know, you have like and a status, and then it's fine. So for a lot of people in the villa, in from where I come from, that was when they discovered I was gay.
Wow.
So, and I won. So then it gave me a gay, but within a status somehow. So, and then everybody was kind of calling my family, because my family is quite well known there, because my father used to run a firework factory, and that's kind of very unusual. So everybody knew us somehow. And it's also in a small villa, so everybody kind of, when something bad happened, they come to support, and when something good happened, they come to say happy, congratulations, and blah, blah. So everybody was calling and congratulating them for my success. And then for my mom, that was a release, like, oh, he's going to be okay. It's fine. Yeah. People is accepting it, and people is also happy about like how he is, so it's okay. So I think like that was like a very good step for my mom. I guess for my dad, it was the same because he was fine with it.
I mean, it's normally the dad that's the problem. That's really great that your dad...
Yeah.
Was that your first competition ever that you won?
Yeah, that was it.
Damn. Okay.
If you go, you have to go for it. It's no way to be.
Hell yeah. That's awesome. So you said you kind of got into the kink scene from the performance side of things. Did that then translate into like your, you know, private life as well? Or is it still kind of a large part of your persona is about the performance?
I don't think you can perform kink if you don't have a kink side.
Right.
It's like some people asking me, like, oh, do you like your jobs? Like, I don't think you can be a performer if you don't like to be on the stage. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think it's linked. All these people who kind of perform fetish on a stage, I think even if it's something like it's like a dom and a souf or something like that, both roles need to be like used to it and they need to like it. If you don't, other way also it translates that fake on a stage and would not be very successful, I guess. But I think like it's an expression of yourself. If you perform in fetish, but you not have that fetish when you are in your privacy, I guess you escaping from being your own self, because that, I think we are on a stage. I feel like on the stage, I'm my alter ego most of the time. So, but that's myself as well. I always say like Andromeda, it's not me. Because I couldn't behave in my normal life. I mean, I'm not walking on the stage, on the street the same way that I'm walking on the stage somehow. But it's a part of me that needs to be taken out of and expressed. I need to express that. So I think it's totally related.
Yeah. What would you say then is your main kink?
It's interesting because you start discovering different things through the way as well. Like, for example, yeah, like now vanilla it's kind of become boring. You may enjoy as well. It really depends on the person. But on the way you start discovering things. But I guess still my favorite is anal. Anything like anal, but... extreme, I say, like in an extreme way, not like, because anal can also be vanilla, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I saw the size of that dildo.
Yeah, so length or wide or yeah, let's just say fisting or kind of yeah, anything that goes a little bit like out of the border somehow.
So it's much more physical for you. Because, like, my whole... I've never been interested in vanilla sex. So, like, my whole thing is, like, in the brain, you know? But would you say it's quite, like, you're more about physical sensation then?
Yeah, for me, I would say it's more about feelings.
Yeah.
Than now that you put it that way, more than thoughts or brain, it's more about feelings, how it feels in the body, how you... react to certain feelings actions that senses that comes to you when you do anything really. And I think like that's for me like in everything as well, also in my creations. For example, in the Phoenix, I create in texture with feathers, and also I use velvet as material because it gives a different texture than just a plain fabric. And it's about the feeling. Also, like, I haven't printed, for example, my physical cards, like, you know, visit cards, because I kind of want something that when you give it to people, people touch it and they kind of get, like, a feeling of it, you know? I discovered something that is kind of quiet, which is called, like, soft touch paper.
Okay.
And it's like a velvety feeling when you touch it. So for me, like the feelings are very important. And I think that translates in all of my all my life, everything I do in my personal life or when I work in, or in everything, really.
How did you create Andromeda?
I think it was like, well, everything started with an idea, right? But I didn't know it was going to be Andromeda or everything wanted, or what it was going to be. I just knew from very early that I wanted to be a performer and I wanted to be on a stage. And I just started doing what it was feeling good to me. So I started dancing and then I started learning acrobatics and that was feeling good to me. And then my first circle skills was fire, and I like it to be the feeling of the fire, the heat, even like obviously you don't burn yourself, but you feel the hot, the heat of it. And then I did still walking, and I like it to the feeling of being very tall. I think that's how I evolved into being the character that I am today on stage. But it wasn't something that I planned. I just let it flow. And I think that's how my life works. I let things flow. Sometimes, like, you know, you get so obsessed with, you want something to happen, it doesn't happen. And I need to sit back. So, like, let it flow. Let things happen by itself. Well, obviously, you need to put the idea and you need to put the effort in some way. But sometimes when you put too much, you're just stopping yourself from it to happen. So I believe that you need to let things flow. And that's how Andromeda somehow emerged, like letting the energy flow and following the feelings of the moment, I'll say.
Has Andromeda kind of come into your personal life in the sense that, like, I find that my clown persona helps me to be more confident in, like, day-to-day life? Have you kind of had that? Like, because I like to think of a lot of drag queens, I think, do this where, or any kind of performer, really, where you create a character and it allows you to be this thing that you want to be, but you don't know how to be in your day-to-day life. And once you do that, you can kind of bring little bits of it in. And I don't know, I like the idea of kind of merging those two things. Has that been the case for you?
Yes, but both ways somehow. I remember, like, I always was like, but no, I wasn't always very good with makeup at the beginning. I mean, I was good with manual things and painting, but I didn't know exactly which the color should go up and down, blah, 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 how to blend. Anyway, but
sure.
When I learned how to do makeup properly and I was doing like these amazing faces, like, I think it was that way. And I have this feeling like when I was performing, I was having a lot of nice feelings and feedback from people and making friends, or even like having, like, how can I say, like, possible dates later, or I don't know, sex encounters could happen. And then all of a sudden you wash your face, you come back, and those people who was kind of going to be your friend, they didn't recognize you, and then they didn't like you, they want to be your friends. Sexual encounters didn't happen because you don't look like the way you was looking before.
Yeah.
And I guess that's something that happened to a lot of us, especially when you do drag, because you don't do drag to look worse.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to change your face, you want to look better. Even if it's a clown, you want to look better than,
totally,
you know, upgrade yourself somehow.
Yeah.
So what I did was like downgrade a little bit the level of creation in the makeup. Well, not the level of creation, because you can still be super creative, but I didn't make myself to look like something else. I wanted to be that something else still looking like me. So when I get out of it, it's still me.
Yeah.
And you recognize me.
Yeah.
So I bring Andromeda down a little bit more to Adrian, but I also got a lot of confidence from, like you said before, from Andromeda in Adrian. And sometimes when I'm in a situation, sometimes, you know, like, you know, when you arrive to a party and everybody's been drinking for 2 hours and you just get there and it's like, you feel like a little bit out of space, and then it's like, let's bring Andromeda in. And then you engage with people and that. So it's been a little bit of both. It's been Andromeda lifting Adrian up and Adrian chilling down a little bit Andromeda to become this intermediate thing in both ways, because also I think like it's important to stay in touch with your roots, with who you are. So you, because otherwise this alter ego can take you in a place where it's not real. Mm. Because when you are in that character, everybody want to be your friend. Everybody want to take pictures with you. And obviously, not everybody's going to want to take pictures with you when you look like a normal person, because you just don't look amazing somehow. So it's important to stay, in balance with both. And I think, both have helped each other. Andromeda has helped Adrian, and Adrian has helped Andromeda in different ways.
This is why I also really like the performativity of Kink, because it's like we get to do these things for ourselves that you wouldn't normally get to do. I mean, anyone can create a persona and, you know, be a performer in whatever they do, but like I really like the ways in which we get to go, well, okay, we're weird and we're queer and we're kinky, fuck it. I'm going to create the weirdest thing that is how I feel inside and that's what I want to be. And then it gets to like, as you say, really like lift up your normal day-to-day life. What would you say then is like the main experiences in the scene that have really shaped you?
Well, the first time I went to Tortue Garden, for example, it was mind-blowing for me because, to start with, everybody looks like a performer. Everybody really makes an effort, and it looks like you are in a party of a different kind of humans. I don't know. It's just amazing. Like, I mean, that's why I always say you have to, at least once in your life, you have to go to a Tortue Garden or any of these. Well, I guess Tortue Garden is probably the one more dressed up of all of them. And then seeing people like having their kink express without any kind of shy or not needing to hide, or it was a sense of freedom. It was for me like, liberation somehow. Oh, it's okay to be this, and it's okay doing it here and not caring about it, because this is the environment we actually will need always in our life. I mean, not obviously you don't want to be, why not? But on the streets, we shouldn't be judging another people for what they're dressing or anything or what they do. People should be free and free to express. So I guess that what shapes me the most, like the first times I went to fetish parties and also the consents, like, if everybody wants to have something with you, they ask. And I see people asking for consent. It's something that mainstream is actually way behind in that. You see people just touching people and then getting the other one getting upset. Yeah. That very rarely happen in a fetish party. Everyone is, even like somebody with a very dominating side and that's their kink.
Yep.
They always ask, they say the rules and then they go for it. So for me, that gives you freedom.
Yeah, totally.
Because you have free to be and do whatever you want, because you know, like, it's going to be always safe. And safety.
Yeah, fetish is safer, man. Like, I think it's so crazy. I've got, like, straight friends who are like, I just go home with this guy and I hope that it's going to be fine. It's like, you haven't had a conversation. You haven't had, you know, a negotiation really about like what is and isn't okay, or what you do or don't want to do. You just hope that it'll be okay. Like, that isn't safe.
Yeah. It's a little bit like that. And I think like, it's way safer and give you the sense of freedom, being safe, feeling safe.
My like favorite thing to do at any event really is to sit down and just watch people be themselves, because you know, I thought I was the weirdest person in the world. And so when I see other people being their weird selves, I'm just like, this is so fucking cool. So my first event was actually an ABDL event in Berlin. And I was just watching, like, just sat down and I was like, all these people are walking around in diapers and they're just totally cool with it. Like, it's totally fine. And it, like, changed something in my brain where I was like, if everybody here, if the world could just be like this, where everybody here gets to dress how they want to dress, everybody minds their own business, like, wouldn't there be such a, like, great place? Wouldn't the world be such a great place?
Yeah, and luckily, look, we even, like, not accepting another because they have a different religion. It's just, like, terrible what's going on in the world right now. Oh. So we need a lot of freedom, but we need freedom in our heads. It's, I don't know, it's... Yeah. If we just were more able to accept the differences of the others, like we do when we are in one of these events, it would be so amazing. But
yeah, well, it just makes me think, and you know, there's so many different facets of this, and you know, and one is actually, yeah, you say different religion, but that it's the same for a different fetish. Some people like really kink shame, and it's like, but you are like in the scene, so you know. I just think not enough people, you know, no one shows us that this is okay growing up. It's very rare that you get to see people being themselves. And if you get the opportunity to engage with fetish and learn that it's okay to be yourself, because it's not hard to be yourself. Like, to me, it's not difficult being a clown fucker. What makes it difficult is when people, like, tell me that's not normal. And I'm like, why? I mean, it's none of your business.
But what is normal?
Yeah, right? Like, what is normal?
It doesn't really exist. Or normal is, what is normal for you is not normal for me, or the other way around. So people get stuck in their normal and they don't want to get out of it. And yeah, I feel like us in between the fetish people, we are way more open. Even like you say, it might be like some fetish shame. We are way more open than the mainstream somehow. And
oh yeah,
and I also find like we evolving somehow in era. I think that was the era of the beer, and every before, like, it was like you wasn't skinny or fit, it was hard, right, for you to have sexual encounters, you know. But then all this trend came from beers, and the beers were like, so trans, everybody want to have sex with bears. Then I felt like that happened a couple of years ago with ginger people. I didn't know that was a thing, but my ginger friends said, oh no, it wasn't really like a thing before. Nobody wanted to have sex with a ginger, yep. But now it's so trendy. It's like, oh, really? And then I feel like that's happening now with the non-binary people, that before there was
totally
seen as weird, yeah, people. And now it's like so trendy and everybody want to be with them somehow, surrounded by them, because that's the trend. And I feel like also from the beginning, actually, was kind of a little bit hard for me, because I always felt like I was like a little bit flamboyant, even though I'm not very flamboyant. I was a little bit flamboyant for the boy. And I was all the time trying to be masculine, because even in between the gay community, like if you were flamboyant, you were not cool. Totally. I wasn't cool at all at the time. So I think that we've been evolving somehow into like a more open by,
yeah,
because then it happened that at the time, that was when I was a kid, and then when I was a teenager, it was the moment where everyone wanted to have a gay friend, so it was cool,
yeah,
to be flamboyant,
yeah,
because everyone, yeah, oh, I have a gay friend. And then it's like somehow we evolving to be a little bit more inclusive with everyone. But I believe that is exponential, in an exponential level, into the gay or the fetish community. But still in the mainstream, it's a lot of people who are very conservative and not really accepting the difference. And I believe that's fear, because that's the fear they totally have to confront anything that is different or think different to what they think.
Yeah. Or different about themselves, because the number of these conservative people who, let's say they're straight, but they're still a fetishist, they still have some kink, but they like can't accept it. And so they punish other people and tell them, oh no, you're weird. You're weirder than I am. And it's like, look, everybody's weird. Okay, normal and weird, they don't really exist. We made these terms up. So, like, what they mean is always changing. And the idea that somebody, you know, it doesn't matter who you are. When there are people, and again, I think a lot of these conservatives, you know, they're projecting their own shit onto the queer community when they say things like this. You know, especially when they call people groomers and stuff like that. It's like, hang on. I think that's you, buddy. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Or you feel... I saw like a video of somebody who was, I mean, you know, you see a lot of shit online, you don't know if he's staged or not, but was this guy was wanting these people to be parked in their parking area because they look gay, or it was two guys in the car, but he was like, the way he was telling them, like, get out of my parking space, this is our area. It was even more gay than them. We don't want gay here. It was like way more gay than the guys who were in the car. And it's like,
yeah,
man, you got to
internalize.
You got to work with your life, don't you? Do you need, so
yeah,
the way I see it now, because I used to feel, or I guess in general, the feeling is like going against them and these people who doesn't accept us, they need to be taken down and blah, blah, blah. I feel like they have a lot of work to do on themselves, and I feel somehow pity for them because when they feel like
it's sad.
We're not the same, or we have less rights because we are gay, it's like, you've got a problem. I mean, you need to sort out your head, because if you feel like I have to go at the back of the queue because I'm gay and you know, then you, like, I mean, what is the logic of that?
Yeah.
You need to work with just in yourself. I'm becoming a better person. And then maybe we can talk about being gay and not being gay, but it's about values. And if what I have sex with have more value for you than being a nice person, then you just have a problem. So I see them as people who have a big, long way to get to where we are somehow.
Totally. And also, I feel like it says a lot about a person when they are so much more like obsessed with the kinds of sex we have. It's like, we just do what we want to do. You're the one who is like obsessed with how disgusting you think it is. And it's like, you are thinking about it more than we are. And that says a lot more about you.
Yeah, that's a very good point as well. Yeah. Or like, yeah, like, I know having sex with another guy on the street. Like, why are you thinking that I'm gay? Like, how is that you smell it? Like, you know, it's a lot of question marks there.
Well, they smell the cum.
Huh?
They smell the cum.
They smell the cum. How? Why? You know, like, it reminds me, I saw the documentary of George Michael when he was caught on the toilet. And his point was like, well, the policeman wasn't weeing, because if that was the way he's weeing, he will be weeing the whole room.
Yeah.
So... Yeah. But the policeman accused him of, you know, the whole story of being gay or having, like, yeah, trying to have sexual in a public space. But the guy, as George Michael was saying, he was kind of walking in front of him. So, man, put your shit together.
Yeah, seriously. Projection.
So, yeah.
Okay, what have you learn now that you wish you could tell your younger self, like your more sort of inexperienced self?
I don't know. Maybe I will tell him not to be afraid, because when I was coming out of being gay somehow, one of the first advice I got was like, don't tell anyone until you know, like, it's safe, because it's people there who will beat you, you know, like you're gay, or it's people there that will accuse you of things that you haven't done if you're gay. And that really scares me so much that I wasn't the open I could have been. Yeah. It's true that could happen. And probably the person who said that was trying to protect me from this very bad situation that you can encounter in your life. But somehow close... made me be a little bit, first, ashamed of being gay, because, oh, wow, a lot of people doesn't accept it. And then it gave me a lot of fear. So it took me a lot of time for Adrian to reach Andromeda's level somehow, because even when Andromeda was there, Adrian was having that on the back of his head. So I will love somebody to go and tell him, or myself go and tell him, like, it could be extreme cases, but in general, people are going to love you for who you are. And it doesn't matter if you are gay or what you do with people under the sheets or in your bed. It's about your personality and how you approach people. And if you approach people with love and kindness, that's what you're going to receive.
Totally.
But I didn't have that. I said, oh, be careful. Yeah. So, that's the only thing I will say back to Adrian at the time, the teenager Adrian. But the rest, to be honest with you, I think he's been doing quite okay. He's happy with his life.
Hell yeah.
And I guess that somehow shaped, but I would have loved. Would you know when I see all these teenagers, like, they expressing themselves so flamboyant, it's like, that's so cool, that man, that you can be just that, because I couldn't. I was stopped from being that.
Yeah.
Anyway, it shaped my life. I'm okay now. I'm happy with who I am. But yeah, I wish somebody told me the other side as well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, look, you know, I will always say, do what you need to do to be safe. But you're totally right. At the end of the day, you know, especially as adults, it's like, there is no reason not to live your life the way you want to live it. There is just not enough time to waste. Like, and I also think, like, saying I'm happy with my life, I mean, that's how we win against this kind of oppression. It's like, I'm happy. I'm chill. I'm living my life with love and kindness. And, like, that's it. That's all it takes.
Yeah, like, the only thing, like, kind of, like, sometimes is, like, a hardship for me is, like, when people are happy and they're okay with freedom, but then it's somebody who don't want these people to have that freedom.
Yeah.
That kind of people is like, what is going on in the world? Why these people? Why is their business?
If,
like, I mean,
mind your business.
In a lot of countries, still, gay marriage is not accepted. And it's because some people are opposed to it. That's not your problem. Are you married straight? You're happy? Fine. Let the other people be happy as well. So this kind of movement of going against people for what reason, it was really annoys me. And it's like, I just don't think, like, I don't know if it's education or what it is and how we can change that, but they are the ones who are stopping the humans being from evolving. And that's kind of the only thing that concerns me about life.
Yeah. No, you're totally right. So many problems would be solved if we could just stop with that bullshit. Jesus Christ.
If we just let people be free as soon as they don't affect you, or why will affect you? What do other people do? Let them be.
Mind your business, like, for real. I think also that's something that kink really taught me, because, you know, the first few events I went to, I would see stuff and I'm like, oh, that's not my thing. And I very quickly learned, that's okay. It's like, oh, good for you. I can look away if it's not for me. That's totally fine. Like, I don't need to. Hi, Puss. You have a cat that has a jumper.
Yeah. Wow. They don't have hair, so they need to have jumpers in winter.
Oh. Oh, sweetheart. What's her name?
That's the Heather. She's so naughty. She's so been doing naughty things. They all on all over my Instagram as well.
Anyway, I'm just looking at the time. I gave you homework. Do you have a yay for the day for me to end on?
Say that again.
So I like to end on a positive.
Yeah.
So I gave you homework, which was to come up with a yay for the day.
Okay.
Have you got one?
My yay for the day?
Yeah.
Coffee and chocolate, please.
You texted me this morning saying coffee, and in my head I was like, oh, you're waking up. That's your yay.
No, that was my... Do you know, like, sometimes... We don't have always, like, I mean, we make ourselves to look always happy online.
Uh-huh, of course.
Well, some people, that's the other thing, which is very traumatic. But anyway, but sometimes we don't wake up that way, or we don't have that day. Sometimes. It doesn't happen normally, but sometimes it happens. And it just makes me feel so much better sitting down having a coffee and a brownie. So, coffee, or sometimes coffee and chocolate ice cream. And that just changed my life. That just changed my day, and I feel happy. And I've, at least, or if it doesn't make me happy, at least it cheers me up a little bit. So, no, coffee.
That's great.
When you take the coffee, was actually coffee and chocolate.
Nice.
Makes me happy.
Fantastic. Okay, mine is super random, but so my Instagram got banned for a year. Fuck them. There's literally nothing explicit on it. It's so crazy, whatever. I couldn't get it back. They deleted it, now I've got it back. Great. But I've been just watching like reels. You know, I mostly follow fetish people, but every now and again I just follow like a comedian or whatever. And there is somebody who I think she's mostly on TikTok, but it comes through to Instagram. Her name is Corporate Erin. And it is the funniest fucking shit. She basically does Zoom meetings as if it's like, you know, the Q1 corporate, like she's the business manager of, you know, management. And she has this like accent that is, if you've ever been on, a Zoom call meeting, it is so spot on. Like, I showed it to my partner and he was like, I can't even watch this. It's so scarily real. And she does one about like the bereavement policy and, mom, dad, sister, brother gone. Wow. They all died. Okay. Well, you get one day off. And now we need to go through some critical key talking points because I'm going to take 2 weeks off. And it's so real and really, really funny. So I'll link the socials for Corporate Erin. But it just really, really made me laugh today. And since I've been sick, like anything that makes me laugh is really helping. So, go check out Corporate Erin. Andromeda, thank you so, so much for doing this with me. Where can people find you online?
I'm Andromeda Circus on Instagram and Facebook. My Twitter account was hacked and somebody managed to steal it from me. But
fuck off, really?
It still have my name and my pictures, but it's not me anymore. I'm trying to have it down. I've been calling, emailing Twitter or X now, but they don't do anything, or they say like I can't confirm that it's myself. So I'm not on Twitter, but if you see it, can you all please go and cancel or report my impersonation? Okay. Because that now that it's being stolen, that person is impersonating me and it's asking my friends for money. Jesus. So
no.
Go on X or Twitter and report that person for impersonating me. It's not Andromeda Circus on Twitter until that one would be checking down and managed to open a new one. But you can find me on Instagram and on Facebook by Andromeda Circus. I'm most of the time shadow banned, so make sure you tap it properly.
Yep. So it's at Andromeda Circus on Twitter, yeah? Because I'm going to record it right now.
Yep.
That is so insane. What the fuck is wrong with people? Like, who has the time to hack someone's
account? But at least if you steal my account, honestly, I didn't have that many followers. Just delete the name and sell the account to someone else or put another app. They haven't even bothered to change the name, which is so annoying because I can't use my name.
Yeah. What the hell? How do you... Someone's being impersonated, but you have to give another username. Okay, I'll figure this out. Yeah, everybody go and do that because that is fucking ridiculous. I hate when that happens.
Yeah.
And as always, you can find me on Twitter and Blue Sky at tstota. And now, once again, you can find me on Instagram at the_muckle_stota. This whole thing was so fucking... Because it was just my... You know, I do like digital art. And so... This was just my art account, and it's all fetish, but it's like nothing's explicit. It's silly cartoons, you know, like just the fact that it says I'm a, you know, fetish artist. They suspended me, and then I couldn't get a hold of anyone. They wouldn't listen to my appeal. They wouldn't, like, I couldn't talk to anybody. And so after a year, they deleted it, and I was like,
wow.
So I've just started it again. Go follow me there because I'm starting from scratch and I'll slowly post more and more stuff.
Okay.
Anyway, thank you so much for joining me today. I think I'm probably going to go crawl back into bed and die because I'm so sick. But I'm glad we got to do this. And join us next week as we go under the big top.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a lovely evening. Bye. We'll be right back.
Hey guys, Barney here. I just want to take a quick moment to talk about the program that brings the Big Top to life, Zencastr. I use Zencastr for all my recordings, and since taking over the Big Top fully, I have actually tried other systems, but I ended up sticking with Zencastr. It's so easy to use. You don't have to download anything, just log in using your browser and start recording a high-quality podcast right away. It records studio-quality sound and up to 4K video with guests, along with a full suite of professional tools that let you produce and publish all from one dashboard. Being a creator has genuinely never been easier. And I love that I can send a simple link to my guests and we can record over a video call wherever they are in the world. Also, if you're like me and cannot stand the sound of your voice, Zencastr's built-in post-production process makes such a difference. It automatically removes ums and ahs, awkward pauses, reduces background noise, and makes me sound so much better. Plus, the Hobbyist and Creator Plus accounts are always free to use, and their professional accounts are free to try for 14 days, no credit card required. Go to Zencastr.com/pricing and use my code BIGTOP, and you'll get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid plan. I want you to have the same easy experience as I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story.